Hey, we need to start this by thanking everybody for somehow zooming us to the number one spot on sports podcast in North America. That's the greatest screen grab that I've ever had on my phone.
I know. Even if it was just for a minute, I'm so proud of that. And we're not only that, but in Pakistan too.
In Pakistan.
Not just North America, but in Pakistan.
Pakistan.
Yeah.
Well, hello Pakistan, and
yes.
Hello North America,
and Greenland.
We're coming to get you, Chile.
Yeah,
Chile. We're coming to get you, Chile.
Greenland, we're almost there. And in Sim's native country of India, we're unfortunately 413th.
Can you hit me with a little "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina"?
Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is, I never left you. Do you have problems? I think you do. Do you like jelly beans? I don't want to falter.
That was gorgeous.
Thank you.
So, how are you doing? This yet one more week into this quarantine
I'm
and
good.
Shutdown.
It's been an interesting week, you know, sort of Groundhog's Day-ish. I try to find one thing different to do each day, you know, whether it be LSD, Molly, peyote.
Mm-hmm.
So I
trust it.
Yeah. No, it's been good. Kids have been good. Shaved Wilder's head on camera.
I saw that. It seemed like from if the comments are correct, and if I'm to believe what I read on Instagram, it seemed like Aaron, your wife, was not aware that you were going to do that.
She didn't show up for it. Let's put it that way. Here's the thing with kids right now during this. It's just about finding new things to do. And I think that we as parents have an opportunity to make them do more things than they would have done otherwise. I don't think Wilder would ever have shaved his head if we weren't in this situation, because it's just, oh, here's another thing to do. Let's shave your head. Great. Let's do that. You know, and it was
my
fun.
Boys,
it was fun.
My boys are almost two, and we have used every creative bone in our body to try and occupy their time between when they get up and when it's lunchtime, which leads to nap, and then when they get up from that nap till dinner time, which leads to bedtime. So there are two huge windows of time which have forced us to go for a drive, forced us to find the right kind of markers where we can draw on the windows, that you sidewalk chalk, all these things. But what I'm realizing is two-year-olds don't get the whole idea that those markers are only to be used on the windows, not on couches and cabinets.
But you know what? At this point, just let them do it. You know, it's something new. You know, paper gets old after a while. Let's see what the couch is like.
That's fair, but I don't really want to ruin the entire house during this time when we're all stuck inside of it.
Aren't two-year-olds basically in quarantine all their lives, you know, until they're four or five anyway?
Yeah. Nothing has changed in their worlds except that mom and dad are home every day, all day. I'm actually, you know, again, silver lining during a time when people are really struggling, whether it be with paychecks or whether it be with this horrible virus, our FaceTime and our interaction with our boys at this time in their lives has been sensational.
Oh,
and then
they get
time with their sisters, who one's back from LA, one's back from New York.
Are they living with you now? Are they back in the house?
They're back. They go back and forth between my house and their mom's house. Thank God everybody is symptom free and feeling good, so we have at least the ability to go between two houses, and that's the only way I'm going to see my daughter.
How does that work though, you know what I mean, like the back and forth thing? How do you make sure, because I guarantee you there are a ton of fucking people dealing with this right now who have kids. Now your girls are older, but like who have kids who have to go back and forth, you know, per law. How does that even work, though? Do you trust that everyone's good? You know, you just have to have faith?
Well, I think you have to have an open dialogue with the person who runs that household and say, hey, you know, we have done a complete shutdown in our house. Like, nobody is in or out that, you know, we don't know where they've been. And her house, my ex-wife, is like that, to the point where It's basically her and my daughters there, my wife and me and our boys here, and that's it. And I got to tell you, St. Louis so far has been on a bit of a different program. We've gotten to the point where it is you know, pretty much locked down, but it is not as strict. It is state by state and almost community by community with regard to the number of cases in the state of Missouri, the number of deaths. I mean, it's like night and day from where these big cities are. So we are all spread out anyway, and we're just going back and forth. Thank God you can get in your car and go even for a drive. I mean, it's the simplest things are bringing the most joy. But yeah.
I know. We got in the car the other day, and it was like, oh, yeah, like we're in the car. You know, the windows were down. It's like, woo. I mean, who knew that like a car ride could be amazing? I felt like Henry Ford after he built the Model T.
Let's open this thing up, honey. See what it can do.
Totally. How's your sex life with your wife? I mean, I know that you've had, it's been a minute and you know, behind, well, when we haven't been talking, Michelle and I have been sort of talking about how it hasn't been really too exciting for you lately. Well, what's going on, Joe?
Well, I mean, two things. Why are you texting my wife about our sex life?
That's a whole other conversation. She texts me, but
and we'll do that off the air. The other part is everything we've just talked about, from having the two-year-olds, by the time the end of the day comes, unless it's like morning time, by the end of the day, we're done. We are frazzled, and a bottle of wine is opened, and now we're watching Ozark, and we'll get through an episode, maybe two, and then before that, it was Tiger King, and that's our sex life.
Yeah,
They're
young. They go to bed early. You know, they're not like my kids. My kids go to bed.
So do
fucking, like, midnight.
They also get up early. So I'm just on a completely different schedule. When I started broadcasting and I was 19, my workday started in the evening, and I was done off the air at 10:30. Then you wind down, you go back to the hotel, you go back to home, and by the time you go to bed, it's midnight, 1 o'clock. That my whole life was set up that way, and now I'm flipping it all these many years since, because you know there is no sleeping in with boys.
Do you think this is? Are you making an excuse of any kind? Is quarantine making you less attractive to her?
Well, she will tell you that it's made her less attractive to me, which is not the case. But I'm now finding out that my wife is actually a brunette.
Oh. After all these years.
After all these years, and we're coming up on our sixth anniversary, I never knew her nails could get so jangity. Mm-hmm. I never knew the bird thing that was going on in Snow White or Cinderella, where they're like pulling stuff and stretching stuff and dressing her in the morning, was actually going on in my house. And now that nobody else can come in my house and she can't go anywhere to get, you know, work done.
Yeah.
She's like an entirely different person to me.
That's so funny.
I don't even know it, but it's great.
I'm more
attracted to her every day. I swear to God. And
I know, me too.
It's more just being lazy. And I was going to ask you this. I feel like this quarantine and everybody being together while we're all on top of each other has also forced me to kind of look inward. Mm-hmm. And I tend to get really introspective and sometimes kind of shut off, whether if it's with my phone or it's with whatever. I'm trying to find my own little space within my space, mm-hmm. and I kind of shut off. And I don't know if, I mean, I see you doing Instagram videos and doing your act. Aaron doesn't get tired of that.
My act? Like, that's just, that's pure authenticity, Joe. It's for the love of the game. That Kevin Costner movie. You know what I mean? It's for the love of the game. I'm not getting paid. I just, you know, I'm an entertainer, bro. And I fucking entertain. This is what I do. It's in my blood. I can't help it, you know?
No, but here's the thing.
I went into a hole, big hole, yesterday. I went into a Below Deck hole, which is a show on Bravo. about the under sort of the downstairs look at what it is to run a yacht. Okay. And I was 5 hours in bed watching this shit. And my wife was like,
I don't have that luxury.
Doing?
I haven't spent 5 hours in bed unless I'm dead ass asleep for 2 years.
Well, look, it's a trade-off. Okay. My kids are 12, 10, and 6. They can take care of themselves. They can do things on their own, you know? So it's great. You don't have that luxury. You're always having to be on with your twins.
Right.
The difference is, and this gets back to why I don't understand you guys aren't having sex like every single second, the kids go to bed early. If our kids went to bed early, you know, we would be drinking wine and like having a great old time, which we are, by the way. Our sex life is pretty tremendous, you know. But you did have sex the other day, and
thanks for the update.
It went
did
rather.
Did I tell you that, or
yeah,
did
yeah,
text
no,
you that?
No, you told me. Well, actually, she texted me that it was very quick. It was like a 15-second situation.
Well, isn't that kind of how that goes? Well, I don't think it was 15 seconds, but isn't that kind of how that goes if you have a long layoff and then
yeah.
You know,
I mean,
then you, but I we so
but,
along
but anyway,
those lines,
yeah,
along those lines, I was going to talk to you about this. We are having a date night on Thursday night. We are going to dress up in our. I'm going to get in a suit like we're going to dinner. She's going to get into a dress. We are going to go downstairs in our basement, which is where I'm talking to you from right now. I am in charge of it.
Wow.
We're going to light candles. It's just going to be the two of us. The kids are going to be down and asleep. Of course, we'll have the monitor down here with us the entire time. But there will be music on, and there will be an effort made on both of our parts to actually connect as husband and wife
that's
in
great.
The midst of all this.
I love it.
So that's
it.
That's our romantic evening
I love
coming
that.
On,
what are you
on
gonna,
Thursday.
What music? You going to put on like some Barry White?
Yeah. 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 Maybe some Belle Biv DeVoe. She's a huge...
Poison, dude. That's a panty dropper, dude. Poison.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. That girl is Poison.
Oh, I thought you meant the band Poison.
Well, that's that too. Every rose has its thorn. I mean, that's...
Was that them?
Yeah, dude. Right? Every rose has its thorn. Just like every night. Every girl. Oh.
So I give a cowboy sings a sad, sad song.
Every rule has its song.
Yeah. Boom! Then it kicks in.
Boom! Oh, that's a good song.
Yeah, that was their "Bring It Down" song. But if that's theirs, I'm not even 100% sure. Okay,
right?
Fine.
I mean,
I guess I don't know. I'm kind of blanking out.
Yeah,
yes,
it's Poison.
Okay,
oh, Sim
that's
is,
Poison.
Sim, you can talk, dude.
Yeah. Sim,
so we
jump
have
in.
We have our producer's name is Sim Sarna. And he's, of course, in a little box right now, giving thumbs up, wearing a USC shirt. And he's afraid to talk because he's, he's a little
don't
hyper.
Don't be afraid, Sim. You know that when we started this, he started his Zoom recorder just hoping to get in. He's like
the guy
in the bullpen just clawing to get out of the bull. Let me in.
Totally.
Go ahead, Sim.
Go ahead.
It's Poison, right?
I'm never going to get a word in edgewise. I'd like talking to you guys off of all of this, because that's when I know I can actually do my thing and talk and you guys actually listen to me. I feel like if I talk on this show...
Hold on. I gotta stop you for a second. What the fuck is that weird microphone you have? It's like...
Hold on.
That thing looks...
I'm not even...
It's like...
That looks like a sex toy.
It does look like a sex toy. It's a microphone adapter that plugs into his iPhone, but it's like it looks like the head
Why
of a penis.
Why is Sim always in bed? I feel like I'm talking to one of the grandparents from
Sorry.
Willy
okay,
Wonka.
Hold on.
Because he just sits
now.
Back and collects checks. And, you know, he...
Oh, it's that easy, Oliver. It's that easy.
Yeah.
Really. You have no idea. No clue whatsoever. You know, I'm going to give you a lesson
like my
one
mom.
Day.
You sound like my mom when I complain about her doing something. Well, I raised you, didn't I? I think I did just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did all right.
Well, Sim has his Sim.
I do feel like Oliver's dad at times, especially since I've been working with you for now for over a year and a half.
Yeah,
with sibling. I do have this, you know, this father-son relationship with you.
Yeah, I mean, opinion. If your son will increases the value of dad's company, then sure, I'll take that. if the son is calling you every day to try to improve what you're doing and you say yes, then yeah, sure, I'll be your son.
Okay. All right, fine. I like this.
Sim actually has a new kid, so he's dealing with all kinds of shit right now. You know, he's learning how to be a dad in the midst of this crisis. That's an interesting question, actually, because there's a lot of parents out there, a lot of dads out there who have had kids for the first time. And the sort of standard way to go about things, going to the park, you know, taking them to baseball games or whatever it is that's not available right now. You're having to learn how to be a father under different conditions, aren't you?
Right. This is how they raised kids in like Little House on the Prairie.
Right now, it's harder because I don't have the luxury of having a nanny. There's no daycare. So right now, Amy and I both have really difficult jobs. I know, despite what you may think about my job, Oliver, it's very demanding.
I think
and
he's hurt.
It's so we're either taking shifts or I'm doing a lot of responding. I have to pick him up. I mean, he's a year and a half. He's 18 months. So, Joe, you're 6 months ahead of me on this. I mean, does it get a little bit easier? I mean,
absolutely not.
He just demands all of our attention all the time, which is great. I love this. He loves to read. We're playing baseball now. We're hitting off the tee. Yeah. We're putting golf. We're hitting, you know, little hoops. He's a little hoop. So I'm having a lot of fun. So actually, this quarantine is great for the fact that, you know, I'm forced to spend more time with them during this time, which I love. But yeah, it's also very difficult to get anything done. And
it's
I don't
a
see
lot.
How it's
and I don't
improve.
Think it should weigh on your guilt like it does mine. And Oliver knows I live in a puddle of guilt.
Oh God, you swim, but you jump into the puddle like willingly.
An ocean of guilt that you want your own time, and it's okay. And I have a tough time with that. I'm like I'm with these boys, or even with my girls the first go around, and I think guilt can be good to a small degree, keep you on the right path.
Agreed.
You can't be guilt-free. You can't live your life guilt-free. That's not realistic. You have to. I think it's a good check on being, present and being there for others and being there for your kids and being there for your wife. And if not, then you're just a narcissistic fuck.
That's a great point, actually. I never thought of it that way. You know, a little guilt can go a long way. A little guilt as a parent goes is
but
good,
every
is
therapist
good.
Will tell you, even my own, you know, guilt, the gift that keeps on giving. And it's like, well, yeah, but if I don't carry around some guilt to do what's right,
right,
then
you're just
that's not the person I want to be.
Right, totally. But now, is it guilt or is it, you know, a willing excitement to be with your kids and raise your kids? I think it goes both ways. So I think the guilt is what brings you to the table a little bit, because otherwise right. You'd just be an anarchist and running around like a crazy person. But what happens to me anyway is once I get brought to the table, I look back on the moments where I was forced to do the things that I felt like I should do, and I miss it. You know what I mean? Like, I miss waking up with my kids when they're infants. I miss when they're that little, even though it was hard, you know?
Yeah.
You look back at those things, and they're some of the greatest times.
But it is true. And you know, like we said on the last podcast, and it's certainly there throughout, a lot of people have to make a lot of tough decisions with regard to work and what have you, and I can't be there every morning. But that time in the morning, or that time putting them to bed, or that one-on-one locked eyes, phone is not in the room kind of stuff. And that's what I want to talk to Mark Cuban about today, is how when you have as much going on as Mark Cuban seems to have going on, how you are able to connect with your wife, and then in his case, your three kids. So yeah, you do miss that time, and what you put in, you get out. And so I know the answers to the test in some ways, in that I've got 23 and 20-year-old daughters, and I feel like what I put in, I'm getting back now, and especially with the way they are with my boys. I have never had more joy or something bring me to the verge of tears for the right reasons than watching my basically 2-year-old sons grabbing my daughters by their hands and walking them somewhere and sitting down with them and just being with them.
Right.
It's beautiful.
But you know what? You got to that point because, you know, I don't know if you want to talk.
It was hard.
But I don't even want to talk about it or not. But, you know, when you met Michelle, who is your current wife, it was not a pretty picture. You know, I mean, there had to be some growth there, and look where it got to. And then even when she was pregnant, right? I mean, it was a little bit of like a oh shit moment.
Oh my God. It is our objective on this podcast to talk to our kids. And I think that my daughter, I know my daughters will be honest with you, and I agree with you. I think you should interview my daughters without me sitting here.
Yeah.
And they will tell you that it was hard for me to tell them that I was going to get married because I feel like they felt like they were losing their place with me even more. And somebody was replacing their mom, which, you know, they were by then old enough to get it all. They were 13 and 10.
How did you deal with that, though? You know,
it's the hardest thing I've ever, it's the hardest conversation I've ever had in my life when you have to sit down and tell these two beings that you love, you lay down your life for, that you're making this gigantic change and mom and dad aren't going to be together anymore. We could do 10 podcasts on that. I'm sure there are a million podcasts out there about what it's like telling kids and how you get through that and how it doesn't become their fault. And we don't have to do that now, but going from that to then, okay, Michelle's pregnant. Now, Michelle's was unbelievable throughout this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And you know this because I've told you this personally off air, that she learned from her own stepdad. Her own stepdad said, being a step-parent is knowing when to step in, when to step back, when to step up, when to step out. And that's really how he went about it. And that's how she went about it. So she never forced herself onto them. She was not any part of any reason why I wasn't with their mom, which was a huge benefit. Mm-hmm. And then when I told them that she was pregnant, it was tough because they felt like, well, you know, they know how close they are to me and where they sit in my heart. And I think they were threatened that their spot mm-hmm. was going to be taken by the shiny new toys that were about to come into the world.
Had they,
and now everybody's together and it's like they can't get enough of their brothers.
Had they already accepted Michelle fully?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, already before she was pregnant, meaning like Michelle's our homegirl right now. Like, boom.
Not to this point.
Okay, so. Right, and so then the pregnancy sort of maybe piled on to sort of that skepticism just a little bit.
Yeah, because I remember Trudy saying, you know, this is about Michelle. This is, you don't want more kids. This is about Michelle. And it was very, what about me? I actually talked to Kate.
I'm with Trudy on that, by the way.
Right.
Still, I'm still there. I'm still with Trudy.
Talked to your sister, and she's like, you know, Kate's Miss Free Love, and she's like, oh, they should be so excited. But I went and talked to therapists, and they're like, no, this is completely normal. Mm-hmm. And then wait till the kids are born, in my case, kids, because of twins, and it should, and she believed, my therapist believed it would flip. And man, it was like clockwork. The minute those boys popped into the world, it was like they wanted to eat them. They couldn't get enough of them. And now we're all together, and it's been the biggest silver lining of all of this, and it's brought our entire family closer than it's ever been.
What's Michelle's relationship, if any, with your ex-wife? I mean, do they talk?
Pretty much zero. I wish there was more. But to this point, I mean, my ex-wife now, that my daughters are 23 and 20, it's not like they're 5 and 8 and we're doing drop-offs. Michelle's not raising my kids. The kids, by the time Michelle showed up, my daughters were, you know, in my oldest was basically a senior in high school. My youngest was a freshman, and it wasn't like that.
No, I know, but those are some pivotal female times, and Michelle's such a cool woman and youthful and fun and smart. Like, she must, there is a step in, step out as far as a step parent goes with her.
Man, she was so good with that, and I think the hardest.
She's not raising them, but she must be influential, especially when dealing with boys. I mean, this is the time when all this starts to happen. No,
right? No, she said, "I'm coming in to hopefully be one of your closest friends. I'm not coming in to replace your mom. I'm coming in to be somebody that you can count on," which she has been since day one. She moved to St. Louis. I mean, she moved to St. Louis from Santa Monica, California, because my girls were in high school and I couldn't move anywhere. And she's been there from day one. Now I see this thing has blossomed to the point where, you know, they come to her with stuff and I'm not even involved. It's their own relationship, which has been another part of this. It's been so rewarding. And she has shown them a different way to be, and she's shown them, I think, in some ways, you know, and now she's showing them how to be a mom, you know, mm-hmm. because they're old enough to see it, and they see how she is with our boys, and they're learning every day, and they're smart enough to understand that. So it's it was not easy, but we're out the other side now, and it's been amazing.
Mm-hmm. Now if she'll just have sex with you, things will be good.
But there's no. But you're painting that as if she's refusing.
It's okay.
That's not the case.
Hey, it's okay. You don't have to get defensive.
I mean, we started our podcast with you asking for a wife swap.
No, I was just trying to be you know, cool to Michelle because she touches me inappropriately now and again, and I know that like sometimes maybe she needs a little pick me
attention.
Up. Yeah,
a little attention.
You know.
She's got so much attention.
Anyway, my point is with Sim is that, you know, just run, dude.
You can have a nanny, Sim. You just have to abduct someone and then put them in your own quarantine for 2 weeks, make sure they're symptom free, and then welcome mm-hmm. them into the other parts of your house, and they can never leave.
Yeah. Is that what you're doing?
Potentially. But they're happy now. And they're no longer sending out secretive messages to family and friends to get them out of our house. So they're good. They're well compensated.
Smoke signal.
Yeah. Help. Been inducted by the Bucks. We're not doing that. Actually, we got into this program with Au Pairs, which is a government-run program where, in our case, two 20-plus-year-old girls have come. One's from Switzerland, one's from South Africa.
Yeah.
They've been living with us for months.
I mean, here's the thing. I've seen so many au pair situations go wrong because they're usually these young, pretty girls, right? I've had two or three friends who have had issues, and then you're dealing
I think that talks about your friends. That has nothing to do with anything. That's the dumbest point you could make.
Okay, well,
so you're saying don't have an au pair because you don't trust yourself to be around a 20-plus-year-old female in your house? That's the lesson here?
I'm just going off of what you've told me.
Oh, really? Is that true?
No.
These girls are like my kids. I think the best thing is they're basically the ages of my kids. That's how I look at them, but... yeah, I mean, I think there's some matter of trust there that I talked to both their parents and I was like, look, if I was sending my daughter to Switzerland or South Africa, I'd want to look that dad mm-hmm. in the eyes mm-hmm. and say, tell me about yourself and let's get to know you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a home run.
Don't they have only a couple years? Is that how it works?
2 years at the most, and then they have to go home. It's a whole visa thing. They have to take classes here. That's how it's a government program.
Right.
And it's a place called Cultural Care. Not a sponsor, but I recommend it to anybody tuning in.
It'd be weird if they were a sponsor.
Yeah, no, I know. Do we get sponsors? When do we get sponsors, Sim? You're the genius behind this machine.
We can start next week, the week after. We have actually a lot of sponsor interest.
Oh, is that so?
Great. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I can't get over this weird microphone like plugged into your phone.
I can't. If we get great sponsors, can I buy you a new headboard just because I want a better background when I look at you?
This actually came from a sponsor from a previous show, Sleep Number. Not a sponsor of this show, but this is a Sleep Number headboard, and it's awesome.
What's your sleep number?
I'm at about an 85.
Is that firmness? That
it's a little, yeah, firmness. It's a.
You know what? What's your boner? What's your boner number? Mine's at like 85. No. What's your boner number right now, Joe? Are you zero?
I'm zero. Well, yeah. Why would I have any reading whatsoever?
No, I think I could be negative. You know, it's so weird. My wiener I think every man can probably relate to this. Sometimes, you know, when it's flaccid, it looks great. And then sometimes it just doesn't. I don't know why. I mean, it could deal with, it could be temperature, but sometimes I'll go to take a leak and I'm like, oh yeah, like, all right, nice. And then sometimes I'm like, wow, okay.
Wow.
My sleep numbers like in the negatives.
Yeah.
You know?
I think every male has that going on.
I know. I don't like that. I wish it would just, when it's soft, if it would just stay one size. you know, consistency is good for me.
Maybe it's
structure.
Your diet.
I need structure.
Maybe it's the weed.
No, it's not the weed. It's ridiculous.
Could be. No. It could be.
No, no, no.
Hey, we're like 2 minutes away from Mark Cuban joining this conversation.
I know. I'm excited. I'm excited. I've met him. I'm sure you've met him a few times. I've only met him a couple of times, but I'm excited just to get in it with him. He seems like an amazing dad, you know, especially being a billionaire and having children. I'm excited to talk with him about how that works. Not only that, but he's also a celebrity now. So I'm curious to see how he does it. My parents did it a certain way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They really made sure that we understood that our life was not the real world, you know? And I'm curious sort of to see how he goes about that and, you know, what sort of structures he puts into place to, you know, make sure that his kids know that you are lucky motherfuckers, you know?
Right.
That's what I'm most
speaking of which,
about.
And we can take this out.
Yeah, we'll take out the
send me here
au pair stuff too, because you scared me, Joe.
Why?
I don't know. It made me feel like you made me feel creepy or something, like, you know, like, oh God, you know, what's your problem? Now we should keep this in. Because I like this.
Why are you so? I'm finding a sensitive side of you. You're like Mr. Hardass, and I'm the big pussy in this whole thing. And
why
I
you,
think you're,
that,
you
that's
might
your
be
own
a little
perception
bit more sensitive.
Of things. No. I don't want to be insensitive to, you know, potential au pairs or women. Like the way that you sort of painted me when I made that comment was like, oh, what? You have a fucking problem, bro?
I was just kidding. Jesus.
I know, but all right, keep it in, I guess.
Why? He just emailed me, and he's having a tough time getting on Zoom. So
who? Cuban?
I just sent him the
the irony. Link. The irony. The tech man of all tech men has a problem getting on Zoom. I want my MTV. That song reminds me of my father, Bill Hudson. He played me Dire Straits for the first time.
Who
ever.
Did?
My dad, Bill Hudson. I Want My MTV reminds me of him. He told me that he was the guitar player of Dire Straits. I believed him too forever. I still think he might be. But every time I hear that song, it reminds me of my dad.
Does it make you weep?
No, but I've been texting with him. Oh, this is going great, you guys. This whole like lead in, it's exactly how I envisioned it.
Oh, shut up.
This transition is fucking genius. Thanks, Joe.
If you do, I told you so. I'm hanging up.
Hey, look, I'm smart. Okay, I know what I'm doing. Just for everyone, for everyone who's listening to this, like we had about a 45-minute conversation before we even started recording this episode about how to transition. Hold on, let me finish how to transition into this. And I said it's going to be weird with the Zoom and like getting in, and you know it's not going to be smooth transition. And Joe and Sim just, you know, kisses Joe's ass, I think, because he just loves sports. And so I've become second in Sim's world. So everything Joe says sort of is gold now. And I was like, all right, let's give it a shot. And here we are. We were in a great conversation. I was about to talk about my dad and how we've been texting lately. And it got cut off because we're trying to figure out the transition into Mark Cuban.
Oh my God.
Let this be a lesson to both of you.
You're making me gassy.
Well, take some GasX. Sponsored by GasX, Daddy Issues.
Hello.
Audio, there you go.
Ah,
now we're kicking with heat. Okay.
There he is.
Oh, and he's got
the Mavericks.
Hold on, I got to get rid of that because I got something better. Let me get this all organized. Okay, but we're not recording video at all, so it doesn't matter.
No,
okay.
No.
It doesn't
no.
matter.
Cool.
No, right, but we're looking at an NBA championship trophy, which And prior to that, Mark, your background was that was your arena. How much are you dying for the day when that thing is filled up with Mavericks fans and we're back to normal?
It's killing me, man. Just being able to go out there and feel that energy and feel that buzz. It's killing me as a fan that, you know, there's nothing on. I mean, I don't mind esports, but I'm not going to watch, you know, Rocket League. That's not my thing.
Mm. Yeah. How's your time been, though, at home? I mean, it's a whole different world we're all living in. We were just talking about it before you came on, just about the FaceTime that you get with your kids and your family that really doesn't get to happen much.
So I'll tell you a quick story. Right? So my oldest daughter is 16, Alexis, and she's going nuts, obviously. My 13-year-old daughter is handling it a little better. My 10-year-old, he's cool. He's having fun playing Minecraft. But so I'm taking a walk around just to try to get some exercise. And I see my 16-year-old walk out in a bathroom and get in her car because she's just got a car. And I'm thinking, oh, no, she's escaping.
In a bathrobe. It's like a mental institution patient
yeah,
just got
she's
out.
In her bathrobe, right? And so I FaceTime her, and she picks it up. She goes, I escaped and clicked off, right? And then I called my wife. I'm like, where's Alexis? She goes, I'm with her. They're doing like a drive-through parade for someone's birthday.
Yeah.
They all put balloons on the cars, and they're parading by this girl's 13-year-old girl's house, a friend of my daughter's. So I literally thought she had wigged out and was trying to escape.
That's funny. Those birthday parades, I've done two of them now. This is obviously the new thing.
Yep.
And this is the one thing that I think that I'm going to petition to keep after this quarantine is over. I love it. The going to the birthdays on Saturdays, and by the way, I'm just going to say this right now, to every person who schedules a birthday on a Sunday during football season doesn't deserve to be on the earth. Okay.
No kidding. That's like weddings on holidays.
Yes. But I do love the drive-through birthdays thing because you don't have to sit there. You don't have to interact with anyone. Just toss a present on the lawn and like, let's get going.
You know what? Hopefully this will also lead to the end of co-ed baby showers.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's up there in my priorities, the things that need to change.
You guys are just miserable, lonely dicks.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
What are you talking about?
I mean, it's about.
You had one.
No, I feel like there's some value in people getting in the same room. And no, do you hate your kids' parents that your kids' friends' parents that much?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, but if you let's go to dinner maybe and have a few cocktails. I don't want to go sit on a birthday on a Saturday. It's the weekend.
Birthday parties I can handle at least a little bit because there's going to be football on. You don't have to give all your full attention. But when it's a baby shower, half the people there are going, ooh, all the presents, right? And you're going, where's my watch? Where's my watch? Where's my watch? When can we get out of here?
That's
you know, Mark. Reading about you, what really caught my attention as a dad, at least with regard to you, and then when I compare it to my life, and certainly to Oliver's, we're all so busy. But I feel like you have found a way, Mark, to connect with your kids despite forget the pandemic and the quarantine and everything else. I feel like you are able to unplug and actually really be with your kids. And that's something that it just seems, with all the reading I've done about you, is very important to you. How do you accomplish that? You put the phone in the other room? How do you do it?
It sounds because the majority of time that I want to spend time with my kids, they don't want to be anywhere near me. So,
right.
You know, just like regular kids. So it's not like I have some secret formula. But at the same time, when I get that time, and we're trying to do something fun or different or interesting. And effectively, they become the party planners, right? Particularly my oldest daughter. So when she wants to do her TikTok, it's like every day, Lex, we doing a TikTok? Alyssa, we doing a TikTok? And, you know, she wants to be TikTok famous. So I let her use me as much as possible and, you know.
By the way, dude, I've watched a couple of your TikToks. They're amazing. One of them you hit perfectly. There was one where, I mean, it was gold. You were right
and so, I mean, she picks them up right away. She cracks up. I have to practice for 30 minutes, right? But it's good. So whenever I get the chance to spend time with them, I wish I could say it was me driving the show, but it's them.
And I also sense, Ollie, sorry to cut you off.
Go.
It's vitally important for you as a person who is in the category of a billionaire to make sure that your kids stand on their own?
Oh, yeah.
And accomplish their own. And I admire that so much. And it seems like that's something that's drilled into them from when they're really little.
Yeah. I mean, early on, they had to earn everything. And because we want it to be, it's hard to be normal, but we want it to be as normal as possible, you know, because we just, there's just no way it could be 100% normal. And so like now, I mean, you know, we're used to having help around the house. There ain't no help around the house. And so they're doing their own laundry, you know, they're washing their own dishes. They're sometimes cleaning their own rooms, you know.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes picking up after themselves. And so, you know, that's a positive. And they know, I mean, I've been very clear to them that I'm not going to just hand everything over. They're going to have to earn it. And they're all, they figured it out. And, you know, I think in some respects, they're prideful enough that they don't want to be taken care of. You know, they want to know that they can do it on their own. All of them, all three of them. And so I respect that and I'm proud of them for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up in a similar situation, you know what I mean, that your kids grew up in, because, you know, it's not just about the wealth. I mean, you're famous now at this point. People know who you are.
Right.
You know, I grew up with famous parents, and it was a different time, obviously. You know, social media wasn't there and the technology wasn't there, so we weren't everyone's faces all the time. But my parents made it a point to not give us everything and to help us understand that the world that we're living in right now is not the real world necessarily.
Right.
There is a real world out
there. Yes, there is. Yep.
But being spoiled, okay, being spoiled is more of a state of mind than actually getting things. There are plenty of people out there who are spoiled as shit who don't get a lot. You know, they just are entitled, right?
Yeah.
So we had nice Christmases, we had nice vacations, but when it came to asking for money, allowance, chores. When I went to college, the amount of money that I got. I mean, it was like, no, you got to work for your own shit right now.
Yep.
I got a
Absolutely.
Credit card at college because they basically just hand them out, right? And I was $300 overdrawn. And I called mom and I was like, can I borrow $300? For what? A credit card. You have a credit card?
Yeah.
She goes, figure it out. No way. I had to call my friend's father and borrow $300 to pay off the credit card bill.
So my daughters went to lunch one time, and they all with a pack of their friends. It's one of our, you know, she's just getting, you know, full of herself. A bunch of girls going out, hanging out, and they went to a diner, and they just ordered, and it came time to pay, and nobody had any money or anything, and then they finally figured out what, you know, and I'm like, nope. Mm-hmm. Figure it out.
I know. Figure it out. That is like the motto for my kids. Is figure
yep.
it out. Did
exactly.
you grow up that way? You know what I mean? Like, do you instill a lot of sort of, you know, how you grew up and how your parents raised you into your own children?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them to have to figure things out. We're not going to just hand it to them. And look, they'll work around me a lot of times and things that you know, they'll know that I don't see this or I don't see that. But at the same time, you know, you could just tell by how they respond to things. You know, it's not like, you know, they don't know that it's important to me and they have to deal with it. So if we're at the dinner table or whatever, you know, because the way I know is because they always use schoolwork as an excuse, you know, because they know that's a priority for me and reading and learning. And so, you know, it's never, I just don't want to do it. It's mm-hmm. always, well, I've got this homework and that homework. And I'm always like, well, tell me about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, trying to call them on it, but they're good kids. I'm really, really lucky. You know, they're really good kids and they've got their head on straight. And, you know, every now and then they're a little bit spoiled, but for the most part, you know, they recognize that it's on them.
Yeah, that's normal. I mean, look at Joe. The only reason Joe is anywhere is because of who his dad is, you know?
Right?
Nepotism's awesome. I don't know what you guys are talking about. There's nothing wrong with nepotism, but then you got to do the work. You know, and that's how it would be for any one of your three kids. It's fine to get in the door.
Right.
I just think that, you know, if one of your three kids do follow you or get into the company, they're going to have more scrutiny
oh,
and
yeah.
more eyes on them than really somebody off the street. And so that's how it was for me. And I was doing it publicly, trying to broadcast, actually sitting in a booth with my dad.
That's tough.
And, you know, when you do that and you're looking to your left and there's a dad who's in the Hall of Fame and you're trying to do it as a basically a little kid at 21 years old, I felt like it was a high wire act every time we went on the air. And if I fell off that high wire, I might not get back on.
But so, you know, I was so proud of you. So, so proud of you. You know, now that you're a dad, you realize just how proud your parents are and you get those same feelings, right? And the crazy part is my dad never made more than $40,000 a year in his life. He did upholstery and cars, but I see my dad and myself and my mannerisms and things that I do and, you know, on an ongoing basis, and you just connect it all.
How great was it that when you hit it, Mark, you had the intention of allowing, in essence, your dad to retire just have whatever life he wanted, but he didn't want that. He wanted to keep working. I mean, that says so much about him, and I'm sure so much about what he passed down to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my dad, my mom, it was always about work, and my mom to this day shops at TJ Maxx. I mean, she's buying, you know, just the cheapest stuff she can find. And it's just ingrained into her. And so, you know, it's just fun. It's rewarding to just feel the things that I grew up with. And, you know, I remember when I told my dad the first time I made $100,000 in a year, and I was 26, I think, or 20, 27 maybe. And he just cried. He just cried and cried and cried. We got to the point, you know, he always wanted to grab the bill no matter where we were, right, to pay for dinner. And I had to get to that point where I could convince him that it was okay. You got to let me pay now. And he still wouldn't. I mean, to 2 years before he died, and we would go out to dinner and he was taking the bill, even though it was my credit card, he was still going to take the bill.
That's so great. Well, you know, it's so funny because I've said this since I've had kids. I don't think we fully understand how much our parents loved us until we have children of our own.
No question.
You know what I mean? Because Absolutely. When your mom or your dad are gushing on you and hugging you and loving you, and you're like, Jesus, okay, I get it. You love me. Leave me the fuck alone for 2 seconds.
Yep.
But now that I have my children, I'm like, oh my God, I get it now. I get why you are so obsessed with me all the time, you know?
No question. I mean, I can't hug my kids enough, and it's just annoys the shit out of them, right?
I know.
Annoys the shit out. And my middle daughter, she won't hug me anymore. She'll just do belly bumps. My 13-year-old, you know,
Ellie
Buck's okay. Not so much.
Did you see your dad a lot? I mean, was he around a lot when you were a kid, or was he just working his ass off?
No, he works his ass off. But I mean, he was there at dinner, so we all pretty much had dinner together. So, you know, he'd get up at 7:30, and then work until get home at 6 days a week. So, I mean, I saw him because we were at school, obviously, or whatever during the day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was always coming home for dinner, and you know. Yeah, it was great. It really was.
And you were a Steelers fan growing up, right?
Steelers, Pirates, Penguins, Pittsburgh Pipers, you name it.
Anything Pittsburgh. And was your dad a big sports fan?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he brought you into the Pittsburgh sports world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was always, he's screaming, yelling at the TV. You know, Franco Harris got a breakaway. Go, go. He's yelling and screaming. And so now my brother's just out of habit, you know, if we're watching a game. Same thing, doing the same thing. And my grandfather on my mom's side used to love wrestling. And there was a wrestler, Bruno Sammartino and George the Animal Steel.
When
I'd go see him on the weekends, we'd watch wrestling together. And so just sports, 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 sports.
Mark, it's been long enough since you've made your money that I don't know that people are now, or at least another generation, is aware of how you started. And that I think it's just brilliant. You know, I'm an IU guy. You went to Indiana.
Yep.
And basically – you know, the greatest invention came out of a necessity for you guys to hear the IU basketball game that you couldn't get in your dorm or wherever you were. And that's what started you on this, this journey.
Yeah. I mean, right when the internet first came out and I was in Dallas to listen to an IU basketball game, we'd have somebody in Bloomington hold a speakerphone next to a radio. And then we'd have a speakerphone on the other side. And we'd have our six pack of beer and we'd just sit around drinking beer, listening to Don Fisher, you know, broadcast the games. And and then it was like, all right, wait, this internet thing, we've got to be able to do audio over the internet. So let's try to, I'm a tech geek. I did networking. Let me try to figure this thing out. And so we started a company called AudioNet. And then all of a sudden we figured out how to get people online listening to Dallas sports. And it just blew up. We went to the, you know, we went to KLIF. There's a guy named Norm Hitzkiss who had a sports show.
And
So we would literally take a VCR with an 8-hour VHS tape, record it from his board, and then take it back to the second bedroom of my house, and then connect it to my old Packard Bell computer and encode it. Then we put it online, and I'd go on AOL chat boards, and I'd go on CompuServe and wherever I could find people saying, if you're anywhere outside of Dallas and interested in Dallas sports, you got to download all this stuff, but go to audionet.com, and you can hear all the Dallas sports shows. And then the next thing you know, we had 10 people, then 100, then 1,000 people a day, then 100,000. And, you know, then we got to video, and then the whole thing blew up, and then we sold it.
Wow.
That was the whole start of the streaming industry.
And then that
was like a big deal, but now it's like no biggie.
So I was wrong. So that was after you got out of IU that you wanted to hear the IU
games. Yeah, I'm old. It couldn't have happened way back then.
That's not true. You know, when you say you're old, you certainly, first of all, you're not. We all know that. Yeah. You're in your early 60s, but you
61,
don't.
Not early, 61. Just
okay, you're 61. You're six. I'm about to turn 51, but you come off so young. And what for whether it was intended or not, you have to be the most relatable billionaire in the history of the world. Like as we, you know, as you see the changes that have transpired in this country and people looking at wealth in a certain way. And yet I don't know. I just see you and I feel like you're somebody that people connect with and yet, you know, at least financially, you're in your own stratosphere. How do you think you've been able to accomplish that?
Because my friends are that when I was broke, you know, living six guys and, you know, I went from IU down to Dallas and I knew a couple of folks and they're like, you crash with us. So I lived six guys in a 3-bedroom apartment, you know, it got fired from jobs, worked as a bartender at night, the whole spiel. And I was happy then. I was just broke, you know, and my friends that I made then, my friends from high school are still my best friends. You know, those are still the guys I talk to, and my brothers, they wouldn't let me change, I guess. And there was no reason to change. I was having a good time. You know, why would I change? And so just, yeah, the same stupid idiot I've always been, just with a bigger bank account.
Yeah. Have you slowed down at all? I mean,
it's different. You know, it's just different. I mean, I'm still, to me, business is like a sport. You know, it's just all competition all the time. And, you know, with Shark Tank and everything, that changed things. Just because of my visibility. So it's just, you know, change the, just go.
Oh yeah, dude.
Like
it's it's actually really interesting because, you know, again, you're Mark Cuban, right? Everyone knew who Mark Cuban was in the sports world and even outside of it, just because you were sitting on the floor, you were engaged, you were an engaged owner. Shark Tank comes along and you are like a full-blown celebrity now. So you've had almost two iterations of who you are. It's crazy, dude.
Yeah, it changed.
How is that? Do you like that? I mean, is it fun? Or
I knew what I was getting into. Yeah, I mean, look, I knew what I was getting into. So if I go out, I know people are going to come up to me and talk to me or whatever. So, you know, like you guys, you go to the same places all the time where people are used to seeing you and it's no big deal. And when I'm with my family, I mean, people leave us alone. So, yeah, it's fine. But I get it, you know, like, you know, you get a table at the restaurant you want, you make a phone call, they pick up their call. And so, yeah, I'd say on balance, it's very.
And what about your kids? What's it like being Mark Cuban's kids?
Annoying, you know
what
I mean? Probably.
Is it because
coming up?
Yeah, I get that. I've got that shit all my life. You know what I mean? Like, do they have any sort of, is there any resentments at all? Or any sort of?
I don't think so. I mean, because I think the positive of it is they see how I treat people when they come up to me, people I don't know. And I think, you know, it's my wife and I both have sent that message that it doesn't matter who they are. You're treating them with respect and you're being nice. And it's just, it's easier to be nice than it is to be mean or to just ignore somebody. It takes a whole lot less time to say thank you and take a picture than it does to try to explain why you can't take a picture. You know, and I think seeing me be nice or when we're wherever we go, just the same way my dad treated people, you know, it's just no different. And I think, you know, that carries on and hope, you know, I think it's resonated with them. I guess time will tell, but I'm pretty sure it has.
Back when, you know, I live in St. Louis, my dad made his name in St. Louis. It's a small town. So when we would be out to dinner, my dad, I'm sure treated people, you know, he came from nothing. He came from Holyoke, Massachusetts, had no money, made his own money, and never really hit it big. Always at the same restaurant, would get out a napkin, paper napkin, and try to total up his net worth. And one time he got to seven figures and was freaked out.
That's
and,
awesome.
I mean, it was everything he had.
That's like, awesome. That's awesome.
You know, the gas that was in the car that was in the parking lot was a part of the ad.
I remember those days.
But I mean, if somebody came up to our table, I swear to God, as much as I'm as sure as I'm sitting here talking to you guys, he would pull a chair out and they would sit down with us. And he was the most open book and the most welcoming person. And I saw that as a kid. It almost gives me guilt because I'm not to that degree. I'll be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm nice. I'm overly nice to everybody. But it's like my God, and my dad was like, come on, Dad, we haven't seen you in 2 weeks. You know,
maybe
we don't want to
generation, because my dad was the same way. My dad, pull up a chair, have some wine, let's get drunk with anybody.
That's so great.
It drove me crazy, man. Like, I have memories of when we were out, you know, having dinner or whatever, and people would sort of be disrespectful and come up, it would drive me nuts. I would get angry. I would get internally angry. And it, by the way, this is part of my own psychology. Even when they were being respectful, there was something about it. And that's why I wanted to ask about your kids too, because for me personally, it was almost like they were taking away my parents in a sense.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, what the fuck are you doing right now? This is, it drove me crazy. You know what I mean?
I mean, I hope they don't feel that way, you know, and just don't show. I don't get that sense, but excuse me, I guess, man, you know, time will tell us.
Yeah.
but I think the bigger point is that example that was set there. It's hard, you know, I carry that forward and I look at how my dad did it. Now, here we are, you know, X number of years later, there's a social media world, and I think that's the new layer. So back then, it was, I knew all eyes were on me in a small town because I was Jack Buck's kid. That was one thing. But now my kids are on social media. You know, they live, you know, they're fans that hate me, and they'll shoot stuff at my kids or whatever. They see them at IU. My daughter went to IU. My other one's at USC. They have known since they were little that they had to act the right way and can't post stuff.
I tell my daughters all the time. You know what? We had to talk about alcohol or being on Snapchat or TikTok or whatever. I'm like, if your friends get drunk and do something stupid, their parents get mad, right? If you do it, it's on the front page of every paper. You know, it's going to be a thing on Snapchat, Discover, right? About my daughter doing this or this, right?
But how do you balance that, Mark? You know what I mean? She's 16 years old. She's obviously going to be experimenting. We all did when we were young. So, you know, how do you balance that?
I mean,
you
just try to, you know what's going to happen, right? And so you just try to make sure that she's careful when it does happen. And
right.
So, you know, teaching her how to drink, you know, teaching her, you know, what you can and can't do on Snapchat for both of my daughters, you know, on TikTok, just looking at all the comments they get on TikTok or Instagram lives and, you know, all those types of things. And so I just have to be careful and tell them to be careful. It's just part of the drill. You take the good with the bad.
So how do you deal with boys? Where are you at with boys? what kind of dad are you when it comes to that?
They don't like to bring them around me anymore. So the first time my oldest had a date at a Mavs game, right? It was when it was warm and they both had shorts on. And it was the first time that they had done something together. And I walk over to him at halftime to take him across the court. And I go to Evan. I go, if your skin touches her skin, I make the slashing, you know.
That's so great.
You know, and then my middle daughter, I call them all Humphreys. I say, which Humphrey's at the top of the list? You know, which Humphrey is this one? Why do you call him Humphreys? I'm like, I don't know. It just sounds right, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
But that's good. It sounds like you have an open relationship, though, with them. You know what I mean? You're able to talk about it, which is extremely important.
From my side, it's open, but they're still 13 and 16,
sure,
right? There's so much they're going to tell their mom or dad.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember what it was like for me, right? So.
Yeah. Oh, God, I know.
I I think you, Mark, have been so good during this quarantine, this pandemic. I've seen you on CNN. I've seen you on different news channels talking about where we think we sit, where we think we're headed, at least with regard to sports and getting back in these arenas. So as we wind down, I do want to ask you, you know, where you, what do you guys talk about as owners of
honestly, in the NBA? I haven't talked to any other owners at all. I haven't talked to Adam recently at all because it's kind of out of our hands. It's just safety. That's it. All we care about is safety because you can't put anybody at risk. You know, you've got to make sure your players, your organization, your fans, other customers, that there, anything you do, put safety first. And until the doctors come out and say the coast is clear, you know, we don't have this viral predator putting us at risk, then there's not a whole lot we can do. But the good news is, I think the technology and the science is, so many people are focused on it, it's moving forward fast enough that I'm hopeful there'll be a solution sooner rather than later. And again, this is just me hopefully saying that we'll be able to play games, not in front of fans necessarily, but be able to play games.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. If you could put odds on it or percentage, you know, where in your gut you feel you guys finish? I'm sure if you finish the regular season, it would be really short.
Yeah, five games.
Or do you, and then you just go into the playoffs. But in your gut, you think you finish the 2020 season?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. In my
go
gut,
Lakers.
Yes. I'm not
go
saying
Lakers.
Anything that I Adams go told Lakers. Me or anything, but absolutely in my gut, I feel yes, because the country needs it, you know? And I think we're already trying to take steps at the American Airlines Center, trying to figure out what does it look like when we start to come back into a public place like that? You know, how do you make it so that when someone walks into the arena, they feel confident that they're not going to get sick? What are the steps that we need to take? You know, what type of sanitation is necessary? What type of sterilization is necessary? How do you convey to people that sense of confidence? Do we have an app so that, you know, when you point it at your seat, it shows the last time it was cleaned and who cleaned it and what they used? Or when you're on the you're on the escalator and you put your hand on the handrail, you know, we got to keep it so you're not terrified. So when you point the app, we'll use, you know, augmented reality possible. So anything you point at in the arena shows the cleaning history and updates and, you know, and doing that for all businesses. You go back to work wherever, you're going to be afraid to walk into the conference room. You know, who was there before? And so we're starting to think about what are the steps that have to take place in order to give people confidence that things are as close to normal as they can be. And that's going to be science and technology. And, you know, that's where we're trying to get ahead, because there's no better time to work on it than now. You know, there's nobody in all the buildings for the most part. Now's the time to work on it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And in the meantime, you're paying your employees, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so great.
Just like business as usual.
Yeah.
You know, but so I can great. Afford it. So, you know, but if there's any small business owners out there or independent contractors, definitely apply for the Paycheck Protection Plan. You know, it'll reimburse you, or it'll loan you money for the last 2.5 months of your payroll. And if you keep your employees on for the next 2.5 months, you don't have to pay it back. You
know, yeah, that's actually a good thing. I mean, it's from just one of the great businessmen of our time. Like, what would the, you know, message that you would give to some of these small business owners who are trying to make it happen? That's it.
Yeah, you got to apply. You know, and you've got to grind. You got to do what it takes to stick it out. Because if you know, not everybody's going to make it. And if you make it, you'll be stronger, and there'll be less competition, unfortunately. But that's the reality. And this is your chance to innovate. You know, while you've got this downtime, what are the things you would do for your company to make it better? You know, how can you improve things? What's your vision when we get to the other side? What's your vision of America 2.0? You know, how do you see things happening? Maybe you have that one great idea that changes the game for everybody. Because when we look back in 10 years, there's going to be a bunch of companies that are just amazing that we say, wow, why didn't I think of that? So why not
right.
you?
Yeah, like that app you're talking about, which, by the way, I've already copywritten. So
you're late. Already patented, ready to go.
You know, two things real quick, and then we'll let you go. But I think the common thought is that all sports team owners are rolling in cash. And you said, well, you know, I can afford it. I can afford to pay my employees. But I know for a fact there are some that are counting on gate receipts and counting on activity, and this could tap out some owners if this continues, you know.
Yeah, no question.
Through the rest of this year.
No question. A couple things. One, you know, not everybody just bought a sports team for $1 billion. Some people inherited them. Some people live off the, all the, you know, the revenue and where there's profits. Not all sports teams are profitable. You know, I think everybody thinks, oh, you're rolling in the dough if you own a sports team. No. So if your team's not profitable, and I can't imagine any team would be this year or potentially next year, and you're not profitable and your other businesses are getting crushed, or you have, you know, your money in the market and that's getting crushed, you know, there's people losing billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars. And maybe we're billionaires before and are no longer, or maybe we're wealthy worth a whole lot of money, but because their businesses are just getting destroyed, maybe they're in the service industry, maybe they're in the restaurant industry, maybe they're in the hotel industry. You know, maybe they had production companies, events business, who knows? Any number of 1,000 different industries that are getting crushed right now, they're struggling. They're struggling in a big way. And that's going to be something that hopefully we'll address. But hopefully, you know, the science will play out, the safety will be there, and we'll be able to come back and play. And the science will be there that lets us open up our arenas for next season in particular. And that will resolve a lot of those issues, hopefully.
Okay,
as we wind down, I have to ask you, because as I watch you on these news shows, as I talk to you now on this podcast, we've already established that you're basically in your late 50s.
late 40s.
Would you ever jump into public office? Is it worth it? I mean, I think that the old line is, you know, there's so much scrutiny, and why sign up? The smartest people aren't, you know, aren't down for that kind of a life. Would you ever want to bite that apple?
You know, I looked at it and I put it up for a family vote. My family voted it down 4-1. I was the only one saying yes. But things change, right? You know, the way people will deal with politicians may be different going forward. And so I never want to say never. If it's a different game, then, you know, I'll look at it. So it's not my lifetime dream to be president or anything like that. But if I thought I was the right person at the right time, I'd certainly look at it. But if there was somebody I thought was better, I would back off in a heartbeat.
And you would vet out, okay? Like, they vet Mark Cuban, everything's good.
No, I went, like Joe, I went to IU, so there are more stories than we ever could count.
That's amazing. And I'm still amazed that you, Mr. Internet, basically starter, couldn't get on our Zoom chat here.
No, you just give me the link.
That's because I sent you the link.
Yeah, you had to resend me the link. And when you resent me the link...
Yeah, come on.
He needs to own it to know how to do it. We got to buy Zoom. By the way, Zoom is crushing. Well, is that going to last, by the way? Do you think this Zoom...
I don't know, because they had all kinds of security issues, right? So now there's places that are saying they can't use Zoom, and people are signing up for Microsoft Teams and doing this and that, you know, and Microsoft owns Skype, so... Who knows?
But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Like, you know, yes, this is a horrible time and we will get through it all. But there are ways to innovate right now. I mean, I think you're going to see a lot that comes out of it. And not only that, but just from a non-business social standpoint and getting back to fatherhood and parenthood and just being connected. You know what I mean? Like, we live in a lonely world in a sense, right?
Especially now.
we do now. But my point is, though, is that I think there's a lot of connectivity happening even now more than ever.
And you know what? You know when I think it started? I think it started when Kobe died. You know, when Kobe died, we reached out and we said, I love you more. We hugged more people. We connected with more people. And, you know, that Mamba mentality, love mentality, if you will, I think is carried over. And you see it now more. And I think that opened the door for people now to be more open, to connect more, to, you know, call people they hadn't called in a while, FaceTime when they've never FaceTimed with somebody before. Or like me and my high school buddies have done Zooms with the 4 or 5 of us, right? Just talking shit all, you know, for an hour, you know, and we never would have done that before.
No, I know. It's so true. I mean, I never would have shaved my kid's head unless it was for the quarantine.
Shaved his kid's head on a live Instagram.
Well, because you're almost finding shit to do with your kids now. It's like, all right, what do we do now? I'm like, how about we shave your head?
Do you have hair?
Yeah, I got hair.
Well, when you shave yours, then we'll have something to talk about.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
I would love to shave my head, except I have a potential show to do, so I can't shave my head.
That's just like your kids with their homework.
Shark Tank with a shaved head, that would be awesome.
That's just like your kids with their homework. That's why he's saying he can't do it. You know, like, hey, sorry, Dad, I can't clean my room. I want to read that. I have to read that book. I don't have time.
I am not. Look, if we go back to work and I all of a sudden show up on set with a shaved head, it's not going to be a pretty thing. And people will be like, what the fuck did you just do?
There'll be so many ways to write that in. It's not even funny. It'll be a dream sequence until it grows back.
Have a little more confidence. Have a little more confidence in your acting ability.
Right? Hair. You think a hair makes the difference between who you
Bruce
are?
Bruce Willis?
Cuban.
Bruce Willis is an American institution, Oliver Hudson.
Yes,
he's bald as a cue ball.
This is true. So, Cuban, you shave your head. Joe, it will take one little razor to shave his head.
Fuck off.
Let me just tell you, you know what actors across the country are more worried about? That they can't get their hair colored, and whatever they do,
right,
it's going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Oh, it's crazy
exactly
time.
Exactly right.
It's crazy. I was talking with Joe earlier about that. You know, my wife, I get to see. Joe was like, I didn't know my wife was a brunette. I mean, this is what's happening now.
She's got some shitty nails, too.
Yeah. That's the business I want to be in. I want to be in, like, the home delivery of nail services, because that's going to explode. Hair and nails. Yeah. For guys and girls, it's just going to explode.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Depend up the man.
Oh, God. Well, that's the thing, too, is once this lets up and once we're able to sort of be connected physically again, you know, I hope it lasts. I hope this sort of love lasts. And I always was wondering, how long does it take for something to be ingrained? 18 months, 2 years before
no
it
idea.
Becomes the norm? Are we going to go back to status quo? Are we going to be in love for a minute and then boom, we're consuming?
I mean, after 9/11, we were terrified to go on airplanes and we got back on, right? And it didn't take all that long. But we saw what the TSA did at airports, right? And so that gave us some confidence and there weren't any bad events. And so I think we're going to have to do the same thing. We're going to have to take those big steps and give people confidence, pass all these laws about public places being clean and offices being clean and arenas being super extra cleaned. And, you know, and that seventh inning break, we're standing up to sing "Take Me Out of the Ball Game," and there's 50 people with spray cans going on and spraying everything everywhere, right?
Right.
You know, that just brings up one thing. The dirtiest thing I have ever touched in my life is one of those trays at an airport security check. Now, Mark, you have not interacted with TSA in a long time.
It's been a couple years.
But there's always like one random hair.
No, I see it.
Bins.
No, because even
disgusting.
Now.
It's disgusting.
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree. So there's going to be people. There's going to be a whole industry built around people with just little sprayers, right? That just go around and spray stuff in real time. And you'll be able to tell who the rich people are. They'll have their own little sprayers that come in front of them, right?
Oh, spray boy.
You won't need the big bodyguards anymore. You'll have somebody with a solution that, you know, it disinfects or takes out your eyes.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Hey, don't ever change, Mark, as an owner.
Yeah.
As an owner, you own a team the way I would own a team. Like, I'm going to be on the floor and I'm going to be freaking out if my team gets jobbed by
absolutely.
An official.
You know, the second best part, though, is before every game, I get to go and get up shots before a game. And so I have the whole arena to myself, my own NBA court, getting up shots. And then the early players will come out while I'm shooting, right? So I get to shoot with all these guys, you know, and say, you know, I can shoot a little bit and just talk.
Are you pure basketball? I mean, do you have any dreams to own any other sports
teams? Not anymore. No, I looked at baseball, but they wouldn't let me in. I'm kind of glad that happened, you know, because that was when my kids were really young or before they were born. And, you know, when they're super, you know, when they're just a year, two, 3 years old, they're not real people yet. And my kids were mama's kids. And so it was less like, okay. But now my kids are so much fun. 162 games of baseball or hockey or even soccer or whatever. That would take me away from them too much.
Yeah. Joe's daughter is dating an NHLer. I get worried about it.
Do you? Are you really worried, Oliver?
Not really,
it's such a lie.
For entertainment podcast sake, I am worried about her.
Yeah, she's dating a great kid. They're great. That's the thing, Mark. There are so many good people that are playing professional sports, and it seems like the only people we hear about are the ones that are just morons
and
acting. I mean, my God, there's so many. You walk through your locker room and you connect with one of your guys. I mean, it's
they're good guys.
They're wonderful people.
I've been doing this 20 years, and I could probably count five guys at the most that I wouldn't be cool with my daughter dating. You know, most of them are really, really good guys. You know, it's just, but, you know, and now with social media, they're even better than they used to be because now they know that they can be on camera anytime. And they all have brands at some to some extent, particularly in the NBA, you know, because they're so visible, whether, you know, you see their face in a game or you see them in 2K or you see them on their social media. Right. And so they're cognizant of that. And they're a lot more careful than when I first came in. Guys were wild. Now they're pretty tame.
Do you feel like a father figure to any of these guys? Meaning,
no,
have you?
Hell no. I don't try to go there at all. No.
You don't?
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to be their dad. Sometimes I'm their friend. Sometimes I'm not. I'm always their boss. I'm always looking out for them. But, yeah, I'd rather be their friend. I don't want to be their dad.
Have you ever had a player just hate you?
Yeah.
You have?
A couple. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or they're like, this fucking guy.
Oh, God. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Was it warranted or was it their own problem?
Half and half.
Half and half.
Yeah, if they were dicks, chances are I wasn't going to be their best friend, you know.
Do you get tough, though? I mean, do you get tough as an owner? Like, you know, where you say things you
I have a couple of times. Like, when things are fucked up for whatever reason, I've probably given six locker room speeches in 20 years. Okay. And every time I did, we've lost.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The Grim Reaper.
So we end every show with asking this question. So from sort of maybe a learned or even a genetic standpoint, when thinking about your father, it's a two-parter, right? So what is it that you are so thankful for that you inherited or learned from him that you implement in your life now? And then on the flip side of that, is there that thing? What is the one thing that you wish you did not?
That I love about that I got from my dad, probably the way he treated and respected people. He was everybody's friend. He didn't have an enemy in the world and just taught me to be nice to everybody. Like we talked about before. The other thing that I got from him that I wish I didn't. Oh, golly. My dad used to goose everybody. Like, he would goose us. He'd be walking down the street. Bam! You know, I mean, just the middle of whatever. I could be 30 years old, my dad would goose me. And so every now and then, I'll pull that out of my son, and he's not.
Yeah, that's so funny you say that, because my middle son, Bodie, my wife grabs his little tush, and he cannot stand it. I mean, he gets angry. He's 10.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, my son's 10 too, right? You know, so I'll give him a wedgie and just pick him up.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just goose him and
Funny. I know he hates it. Well, thank you, brother. I mean,
thanks, Mark.
Thank you,
this
guys.
Was awesome. Thank it you for fun. Taking the time with us. This is really special for us. You're the man. Thank you.
No, I loved it. Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
Take care, man.
All right,
thank
later,
you,
brother.
Bye. What a great guy.
What a great guy. That was cool. He's so.
I mean, are you kidding me? That was so open.
Yeah, I know. He's got good energy, man. He's a real. It's like what you said. I mean, there's not a lot of owners, probably none, who are like him. I mean, I think in all of sports.
I was just thinking, like yesterday, I wrote down on this piece of paper. I was like, how many people can be a relatable billionaire?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen. You always perceive that person as being aloof in their own world. They have fuck you money. They whatever. He is relatable to anybody that cries. You see him on Shark Tank. It's like, whatever. He's just like a relatable good dude. You root for somebody like that.
And I love the way that he goes about trying to raise his kids. It's not easy. You know what I mean? Like, I think that a lot of people will have this perception that, oh, Mark Cuban, he has everything. His kids have everything. Life is great. Okay. There is a flip side to having everything. And you know, as someone like Mark Cuban, who can provide your kids with everything, you need to take that into consideration as far as
you have
as
to show restraint.
You do. And I think he does that well. And I think there's a misconception that if you have everything, you're happy. It's just not the case. It seems like he's doing a great fucking job with his kids, you know, trying to teach them respect from an early age. Don't take this shit for granted. This isn't real. This isn't the real world. You are lucky. You are lucky. You know,
it's hard. I can tell you because my kids are older than yours. My 23 and 20 year old girls. If anything's wrong, I want to swoop in and fix it.
Yeah,
I want them to be happy and what and that's not always the right thing to do. And it's hard. It is hard to say no. It's hard to not fix something by throwing money at it. It's hard to. Mm-hmm. And I'm so fortunate to be in that position. And I really believe him that he shows restraint. Now those kids, I'm sure, have great lives. No doubt.
No doubt.
But he wants them. He's the son of a car upholsterer, and he wants them to at times find their own way through a problem, which is what you relayed last week when you were talking to Simmons about Kurt dropping you off in the woods and you having to find your own way home, whether it's literal or figurative. Everybody's got to go through that. I didn't grow up that privileged, and I feel like my kids sometimes I just want to go, hey, you know.
Yeah, but you make a great point though, because you know it's hard to let your kids fall on their face, even because you can save them a lot of the time, you know. But it's important to let them fall down, you know, literally and figuratively again, and figure that shit out. They just have to learn how to figure that shit out. And that's what I was going back to before, the coddling of the coddling of society. You know, that'd be a good guess. There's a guy who wrote a book called The Coddling of America. You know, that might be fun to talk to him about, actually, you know?
Yeah, that kind of guy.
Anyway, dude, that was awesome. That was fun.
Good work. Good work, Sim.
Good work.
Cotton Pickle. Way to go.
Hey, Sim. How do you feel? Do you like that, baby?
My favorite episode of all time. My favorite podcast episode of all time.
Okay, can I stop you for a second? Can I stop you for a second? Yeah. You literally said that about Simmons last week. So
I like this one a little bit more.
Okay, but we have to be honest, especially if you're going to be on the air. You know, we can't be hyperbolic.
I don't want to be on the air. Let's be clear about that right now. I never asked to be on the air.
I know, but
we want you on there. We want you on.
Anyone who talks into a mic that looks like a penis head, you know, is on the. You're on the air. But yeah, so you liked it. You're happy.
Loved it. Amazing guys. Amazing. Just amazing. I loved it.
All right.
I think we should keep the post amble too.
Me too. That's what I wanted to keep doing. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. All right.
That's where we recap. Literally after it when they hang up.
Yeah. Post amble. I love it. We should just call the show Post Amble.
Born on Third.
Damn, that's a good one. Fuck. But people do like daddy issues. It's kind of funny.
And I like where we're taking it with, you know, that everybody's got some degree of it. Mm-hmm. And the issues could be great, but everybody's got a dad somewhere.
Yeah.
So it fits. It's good. It's a good theme that everybody can jump on.
Mm-hmm. But let's do a wrap up.
You just wrapped it up. It's fine. Just you know what you should do? Just thank everyone for subscribing. Make sure to subscribe. Leave a review. Leave a rating. 5 stars. And then we'll see you next week.
Hey, Sim just did it. Okay. That's it.
All right, great. Perfect.
Sim see just did that. Just listen
that
to
Sim.
Sim. That was Sim.
Yeah, so these are the points. Subscribe.
Yep.
Share with your friends. Make them subscribe.
Right.
Leave a rating.
Yeah.
Leave comments.
Yeah.
Unless they're not nice.
Yeah.
Tell everybody that you run into during this quarantine, which is nobody, that you need to listen to this podcast.
Those are great points. It mirrors sort of like my life a little bit. Subscribe, rate it. This is how I want people to look at me, you know.
Yeah. Well, they basically do.
I know. So basically, we are basing our own self-worth on the amount of subscriptions and ratings. So, you know.
Yes.
Okay.
The others are machines. This feels like a mom and pop organization that somehow has thrust itself up the charts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, give me a one hit wonder. Give me a one hit wonder.
Okay. It's
you
like.
Know, you're taking on like the Rolling Stones. You're taking on Led Zeppelin. You're taking, but every once in a while, somebody gets to the top that nobody saw coming.
Yeah. Like, I Think You're Alone Now by Tiffany.
Doesn't seem to be anyone around.
I think we're alone now. The beating of our hearts is the only sound. Yeah, so we're the Tiffany of podcasts.